support for the Alaska Live series of live music and conversation on KUAC is made possible by a grant from Design Alaska. Design Alaska, architecture and engineering for the new frontier. Welcome to Alaska Live. I'm your host. I'm Lori Neufeld. And my guest today, pianist UAF's Lorna Etter and guest cellist Dane Little. Welcome, Lorna. You've stepped up to the mic. It's so nice to have you here.
Thank you once again for having us. I am Lorna Etter, and I have a guest artist here today, Dane Little, a cellist from Los Angeles.
He's not just the guest cellist. He's your brother.
He's my brother. But I didn't want to say my brother guest cellist, you know. You got to do it the other way. And we are going to start with a movement, the Allegro movement, first movement of a Martinu cello and piano sonata number 2.
Okay, great. We have Lorna Etter and Dane Little as a duo piano and cello on KUAC's Alaska Live.
Thank you.
Lorna Etter and Dane Little are my guests on today's Alaska Live. And Lorna, it is so wonderful to have you here again. You have been on Alaska Live many times in one of your many roles here at UAF. One of your roles is as accompanist to so many UAF music students.
Yes, it's a, I mean, I get paid for making music, you know,
what a wonderful thing.
And I get to know all of the faculty members in the music department in a, such a deep way, and most all of the students.
Yeah.
So it's a really wonderful, wonderful gift. I remind myself of that when I get tired or cranky, which
I
never do.
It's great when they come here and they perform and you're their accompanist. You know, they say such wonderful things about you and you're so gracious and you're nodding, but you're never, you know, you're always sitting at the piano and you're not on mic during those Alaska Live performances. This time we are featuring you at the piano and Dane with the cello. And it is really wonderful to hear you shine in that role, too. You're quite an accomplished pianist.
Oh, thank you.
You know, you not only can accompany, but your solos are just really moving.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
That Martineau piece is incredible.
It's amazing. He wrote three cello and piano sonatas, and we were trying to decide which one to do. And, oh, man, I just fell in love with this. It's so dramatic. I mean, it's just, it's really powerful. And he wrote it in 1941, right after he fled France, after the occupation of France.
World War II,
So, yeah. So, and it was quite a very, very hard travel to the United States through Bermuda. He and his wife had one suitcase. So he ended up in Jamaica, Long Island, and had a cellist friend. And he wrote this piece soon after he arrived. So I feel like it's one of those wartime pieces, you know, that are so deep.
You can hear the struggle in it and the, you know, but it finally resolves and he makes it, I guess, to, you know, a safe place.
Oh, yeah.
That's a really dynamic piece and you both played it flawlessly and you'll be playing it tonight.
We will.
At the collaborative recital.
Right. Yeah. All three movements, which will be very, very fun. The last movement is quite powerful also, and the second movement so deeply beautiful and spacious. And, yeah, I've fallen in love with this piece.
Lorna and Dane will be on the UAF Davis Concert Hall stage tonight at 7 for a collaborative recital. And we're previewing just a movement or two from a few pieces that they'll be playing tonight. Dane, welcome to Fairbanks and welcome to Alaska Live.
Thank you.
Is it your first visit to Fairbanks?
No, this is actually my second visit.
Right.
My wife and I were up here just vacationing to see Lorna in August, so...
It's nice you have a place to stay when you come up because Lorna is your sister and
that's right.
Not only have you on stage with her, but she can probably she's probably quite the host, I bet.
Oh yes, I love staying here and hanging out with her and her kitties.
Yeah, and you are from the L.A. area right now.
Yes, I've lived in Los Angeles. I moved there in 1978, same time as Lorna. So
wow, so. Your sister, Lorna, moved away from L.A. to move to Fairbanks, Alaska.
Yes.
And you're still there playing in all kind of different roles, capacities.
Yes, I'm one of those ubiquitous Los Angeles freelancers, yeah.
But you do have a regular gig with the Pasadena Symphony. You're the assistant principal cello.
Yes, in Pasadena Symphony. Uh-huh. And I also... I've been a longtime member of the Los Angeles Opera Orchestra. So,
what's the latest opera that you did?
Sorry?
What's the latest opera that they've done?
Well, this is sort of a Puccini year for us. We just finished Madame Butterfly a couple weeks ago. And at the end of the month, we start Bohème.
Well,
I understand there's Turandot going on here in Fairbanks,
yes.
So it's Puccini time.
Yeah. It is Puccini time. You know, I think that a lot of people, even if they don't know it yet, do love Puccini because it's very accessible and it's gorgeous. So congratulations to the Los Angeles Opera Company for picking up a few of those, and UAF under the direction of Lorna Etter for doing Turandot. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. So, Dane, when did this idea of coming up for the recital, for your duo, for the recital come about?
Well, I think Lorna's had it in mind for a little while. I've been trying to set the wheels in motion to allow it to happen. We started talking seriously about it last summer. My wife and I were up in Eugene doing the Oregon Bach Festival, which we've done for like 25 years, and we got to talking, and so we were going to come up to visit, and we were making arrangements for that, and it naturally led to trying to get a time for this recital. So fortunately, Lorna here figured it all out and made all the arrangements and made it happen.
Does your cello fly in the baggage compartment, or do you get a seat for it?
No, I get a seat for it. Baggage is just a little too risky.
Buy a seat for your cello. That is the sign of a true professional cellist who cares a lot for his instrument.
Yeah, it's troublesome sometimes. In the old days, it used to be half fare. Now it's full fare.
Oh.
But it's just too risky to put it in baggage.
No matter how rock solid that case is, you see it out the window and you see that it's being bumped around and who knows what's happening to it when you don't see it. So you buy a ticket for it.
I had my cello frozen once on a flight to Bend. You know, I mean, it was fine in the case, but I pulled it out and it was literally frozen. They hadn't heated the baggage compartment. So, you know, it's not a great idea. Just buy the ticket.
And when a cello freezes, it could crack.
Yeah, I was fortunate it didn't crack, but what it does is then when it thaws out, it's all that moisture, and, you know, they're held together by water-soluble hide glue, so then the seams start popping open, and, you know, it's trouble.
Yeah. Have you had this particular cello for a very long time? Has this been your choice instrument for a very long time?
I was extremely lucky to get this cello in 1982, so I've had it a good long time, and it's an American cello made in Chicago by Carl Becker in 1919, and I just really love it. I was very fortunate to be able to buy it. And
that cello, 1919, it may not be the longest history for a musical instrument, but still, to me, that seems like it has had some historical moments.
Oh, yeah. It's actually considered a modern American cello.
Right.
Anything after 1900 is a modern.
Right. So. It's a 20th century cello, just like the pieces that you've chosen today for Alaska Live and for the recital. One of you want to talk about the pieces that you've chosen, or you can both talk about it. But 20th century works, that Martinu piece was really a good example of what has the incredible work that's been written in our last century, I guess, now.
Yeah, it just sort of ended up that way. I mean, this program, we basically have the two big pieces, sonatas, one being the Martinu and then the Elliott Carter Sonata, both of which were written in the 1940s. The Carter was 1947. And then we have pieces in either direction. The Rushberg was written in 1972, which ironically is probably the most conventional kind of romantic piece of the bunch. And then there's the Webern three pieces, which were written in 1914, which sound the most modern of all the things that we've played. Let's see what else. There was the Wallingford Rieger. There's a little piece called Whimsy. It's a little showpiece for cello. That was written in probably 1920. So,
Lorna, we sometimes think about, oh no, modern music.
Yes.
I'm going to be too challenged, or I'm going to be just lost in some modern work that I don't know anything about. But I think that at that first piece, it just draws you in right away. And
yes.
So that took the fear, if I had any twinge of fear about modern music, to begin with in this program, that took it right away. How do you make it accessible to folks when you say, oh, it's going to be modern music from the 20th century? I think, you know, Dane said there's going to be some romantic pieces, so that's a good sign.
Right. and well, our newest piece, 1972, is the very, very tonal and romantic language, which was starting to happen in the 70s and 80s, certainly, and it's still around. So I think when we were choosing music, we were thinking of cello pieces that haven't been done up here since I've been here anyway, and cello pieces that aren't performed a lot. Certainly the Carter is and the Martineau and things, but not a lot. So we thought, well, we'll do lesser performed and lesser known works, but that we wanted to put together a program that included many different types of 20th century music. So the Webern is very, very short and atonal, and the audience will hear it and go, what was that? So we
it's okay.
will.
It's a short piece. And so,
but
it's, okay.
It's very, very short. And we will play that twice in a row. So that at least, I mean, it would be a piece that you would need to hear many, many times to just go and get a clue or to be able to be, you know, comfortable with it. And that's part of the problem with hearing Boulez or some of this more Fernijo or, you know, some of the music that is much, 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 much more complex is you hear it first, you know, time and you just go, I don't have a clue what this is. It's very hard to relate. But think how many times we've heard Beethoven.
Right.
You know what I mean? So the more you hear something, the more comfortable you are with it. Certainly the Carter is a very accessible piece.
And we'll recognize parts of that, I bet.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's a very conventional piece. One of his first pieces that actually is started in his, you know, compositional world. It's his first really known work. In 1948, he started his voice, you know. Mm-hmm. The works before then, you know, a few choral works, but this is his work that started him out. Certainly Carter got way more complex as he went along.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, what I know of Elliot Carter are some, you know, pretty challenging for the players, for the musicians, and for the audience.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Very challenging. And he is kind of known for being, you know, academic, complex kind of guy. Mm-hmm. Martineau, he was very uncritical. He wrote things very fast. He didn't promote himself. He often lost music that he'd written. He was very political. I mean, prolific, rather.
Yeah.
And just completely, he'd just write stuff and, you know. So he's kind of considered a less heavyweight composer. He's not even included in some contemporary.
There's still hope that we
books.
Might find new Martineau pieces if you lost.
But they're
some,
beautiful.
We'll
yeah.
find them.
They're
stuck
fun.
In a wall somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. So we just tried to find things that were very, very different from each other, and that we would love playing. And
great,
is something interesting for the audience.
Yeah,
nothing too complex, you know.
Well, what's next on the set list for Alaska Live?
Well, what shall we play? Maybe some George Rochberg.
Yeah.
Maybe part of the Ricordanza, which is a piece written again in 1972 and a very tonal. It is a work that actually is a fantasia on the opening of Beethoven's fourth cello sonata.
Oh, so this will be recognizable.
He uses
also.
That material. So Rochberg opened the door for many, many composers to be much more free with tonality. It was kind of verboten. And also in the 70s, it was the 1970, I think, was bicentennial of Beethoven's birth. So many, many people were composers like Stockhausen and Hinesterer. They were writing pieces based on Beethoven, you know,
and
pieces
by tonality,
with 32 variations.
You mean?
I mean traditional tonal harmonic progression.
Yeah.
And if you know the Beethoven Fourth Sonata, you'll go, oh, wow, okay. I mean, it's just quoted. It's a piece that uses this and just as a fantasy. It's a very beautiful piece. So we'll play part of this for you.
Great. Lorna Enner, piano, and Dane Little, cello, playing parts of pieces that you will hear tonight during their recital on Davis Concert Hall stage at 7. And that's the collaborative recital with Dane Little, cello, and Lorna Enner, piano, tonight on the Davis Concert Hall stage, and that gets started at 7, and they're my guests today here for Alaska Live on KUAC. Thank you. You are listening to Alaska Live. I'm your host. I'm Lori Neufeld. My guests today in the studio, cellist Dane Little and pianist Lorna Etter. And that, I think, was a great example of how the cello mimics a voice. And it has the highs, you know, the altos and the basses in there. And it was just really intricate, Dane.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a really marvelous piece. I actually had this music in my collection for a long time and never played it. So it's really nice to dig it out of the stack and actually do it.
Was it your idea to put this in the recital, or was it Lorna's?
Well, no, this one was mine because I was pawing through music that I had that I hadn't played, and I kind of had never really heard it. So, you know, well, these it's, you know, the 2000s. I went online and dug up a recording of it and thought, oh, we have to do this. And then Lorna agreed. And it's kind of interesting with Rochberg because he was really probably the best known, the most celebrated American serialist composer. He was very much into serialism and sort of took it to its heights. And then in the 60s, he kind of had a complete rethinking of his process and pretty much abandoned that.
And by serialism, you mean like over and over type
like
of?
Like 12-tone. You know, like the Schoenberg 12-tone using the 12 notes and the tone rows and all of that. And he really was a very ardent, I can't think of the word, but that's what he did. Yeah. And then he completely changed course and he decided that serialism just could not express what he needed to express. And I think it was partially brought on by the death of his teenage son. I can't remember what he died of, but that was a sort of a watershed emotional moment for him. And he just felt like he couldn't express what he needed to express with serialism.
And it's interesting to hear the backstories on these pieces because they were all, you know, that was from pieces from Beethoven, but then through Rochberg, right?
Yes.
And through his emotions, and it becomes another wonderful piece. And this is something that you can hear tonight on the Davis Concert Hall stage with Lorna Etter's and Dane Little's recital. And there's more to that piece, right? You didn't play it all.
It actually returns to the material that from the first part of the piece. Mm-hmm. It goes back, but in different key. It actually, there's sort of a key relationship between the sections. They all move down by major thirds.
Really so. Beautiful. And this is making these 20th century works come alive for listeners because sometimes we hear, you know, 20th century modern pieces. Is it all going to be strange atonal stuff that I will not be able to relate to? Well, no, obviously not, because that was really gorgeous. And as Lorna said, it's tonal. It's harmonies. There's gorgeous parts in it. But also, you're on a university campus. You're putting on a faculty collaborative recital. And so you will have a few pieces that are going to be, you know, we'll learn something, we'll be challenged. But the whole time it will also have, you know, pieces that are, oh, you can just get lost in also.
Yes.
Yes. Lorna.
Well, and I was going to say we're lucky here at UAF. I have been very involved in contemporary music, and it's a huge part of my love life with music. And we're lucky up here. We have Morris Palter in under his direction, 64.8, and his that group performs a lot of contemporary music, and his students perform because they're percussion, and this is a 20th century, you know, endeavor if you go into percussion. And you know that he has a music festival, and so we're very, very lucky to have groups up here. He brings a lot of interesting music and performs a lot of interesting 20th century music. So
every year, the Northern Exposure Music Festival that Morris Palter puts on, we have an Alaska Live surrounding those guests and his students. And it is always a high point of the year, too, to hear the new and amazing stuff that's being done out there, and that he brings it all the way to Fairbanks, Alaska.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
It is. And the connections that UAF music has with the world is it's really amazing to me to see this. Clocked Out was a group that came up
yes.
all the way. They were from Australia.
Yes.
Yeah. And you've brought your brother up from Los Angeles, and that's kind of another world in its own right.
It is. And Joe Scott with the Summer Arts Festival, the Fairbanks, you know, Summer Arts Festival way, way back in the day, you know, they had a big relationship with L.A. studio musicians mm-hmm. and teachers and stuff in L.A. So that connection, I think, has been maintained.
And, you know, people want to come to Alaska. When you suggest it to them, they're like, ooh, okay, yeah, I have not been to Alaska yet. It's on the list, and yeah. great to be invited, great to do something I love, and to do that while I'm in such a gorgeous place. Dane, sorry, we're in the midst of, spring breakup. All the snow has melted off, and we're between, like, that spring breakup and spring cleanup.
That's right.
Oh, I warned him.
Brown up. Is that what it is?
Brown up or yes. something. Green up, brown up. I don't know what it's yeah. called. It's brown.
Well, yeah. So, you know, the skies are really gorgeous.
Oh, the weather has been fantastic. It's fantastic. Gorgeous weather
fantastic.
Here. Boy.
And the aurora forecast has been for incredibly good aurora. So keep your eyes open for that. Stay up a little late and see what you see, because the aurora forecast has been for highly active aurora. So I hope that that happens for you, because I don't think in L.A. You see it with the light pollution. Oh, wait, you're too far south anyway. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and there's way too much light pollution.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of L.A., you are... you not only play with the Los Angeles Opera Symphony Orchestra and Pasadena Symphony, you play in some motion picture and TV shows, because music is a huge part of our experience when we go to the movies.
Yeah, you know, I was lucky enough to sort of be starting my freelancing career in the early 80s, and there was a lot of film and television movies, music going on, and record dates. And so I got started doing that. First television at Universal Studios.
That's what was the first TV show that you played on? Do you remember?
There were shows. Well, Universal at the time had a lot of those sort of guitar-driven shows like Simon and Simon and Knight Rider and Airwolf and... all that stuff, you know. So I was doing a lot of those and a lot of things with Mike Post.
I will never think of Kit and Knight Rider the same. I forgot about the fact that the music was a huge part of those shows.
Yeah, and you forget about I remember there was one scene with, what was it, Jan Michael Vincent? Was that the guy?
I can't remember.
Maybe that was a different show. He actually played he had to play the cello. So, you know, oh, man, that was hilarious. But, you know, there were a lot of those shows. Murder, She Wrote, I was lucky to get started on that show. That was a really,
really
fun show. Yeah.
So you played some suspenseful music for Murder, She Wrote.
Yeah, and that was great. And it sort of migrated into motion pictures and record dates and things. So I've been very lucky to have a career in that, doing that in L.A.
John Williams, I mean, that he is the quintessential writer of musical scores for movies, I think. And I love his music. His music is amazing. I mean, Star Wars, you just can't get better than that. Were you lucky enough to play on any of the Star Wars soundtracks?
I was on the Star Wars film. That was really a blast.
One?
And it was great to do it here in Los Angeles, as you know, because the originals were done in London. And so it was quite nice to do them here. Or, you know, do the latest, was it episode 7 or...
So, Dane, you are on The Force Awakens.
The Force Awakens, yes. I was very fortunate to be on that picture. It's always a thrill to work with John Williams. He's kind of one of the few sort of old school composers that we work with now, who's sort of had a career before computers and, you know, knows how to use a clock and do it old school.
So can I ask you a bit about what it's like to work with John Williams? Everybody knows his name, it seems like, you know, whether you are a classical music fan or not, you know that John Williams wrote the theme and the music, all the music for the Star Wars movies and many other movies, but that's his most famous.
Yeah.
So he is there conducting?
Yes. He led most of the sessions. One of the, I think he was involved in the orchestration, Bill Ross, William Ross. He did some conducting on the movie when, you know, they were getting close to deadlines and John needed to write instead of be there at the session. He needed to write more cues. And so, but most of the time he was there and leading the sessions.
So, Dane, how big is the symphony orchestra that plays for the Star Wars Force Awakens?
Well, there were probably about 80 of us. It was a pretty full-size orchestra, okay. Lots of percussion and stuff. At Sony, at the old MGM soundstage.
And so there's microphones everywhere. And in my mind, sometimes the movie is playing for you, but that's probably not true.
Oftentimes we get the movie on the big screen. We didn't get any of that with this one. Okay. He just John had his own monitor. You know, the security is super tight on these things, and so they didn't want any images of any of that getting leaked out. You know, because there's always somebody with their cell phone that'll take a picture, and that's bad news.
Well, it's really hard to control 80 people, and then they're telling their friends, and then it's all out there. And
yeah,
then
no social media postings on that.
So John Williams was the one that had the monitor so he could see the movie while he's conducting the symphony orchestra.
Yeah. And sometimes we had a click, you know, the metronome. They have like a computer generated click that we listen to in the headphones that gives us tempo.
Of course, because you wouldn't
sort of like
want
a
that.
Variable click, like a variable metronome. And it's synced to all the computers and everything.
Because you can't have that click just in the room because then the microphones would pick that up. So you have to have that in
right.
headsets.
We have it in our ears. But John likes to, we would sometimes, he doesn't like to use click so much in the record, in the eventual recorded product because he finds it's too confining. So sometimes we would rehearse to click and then we would go off click and he would do it to the streamers and whatnot.
It really
on
is
his monitor.
Exciting to hear from somebody on the inside who has done this. And how early did you start practicing for The Force Awakens?
Pretty much. Well, some of the music was posted online beforehand so we could download it. But most of the time, mostly you see it when you get there. And, you know, they call up the queue and you play through it a few times and make sure everything's okay, and they do fixes they want to do, and then we start recording.
That's why they call you professionals, because, you know, you... That's why you are professionals, because you come in, you sit down, and 80 of you play this score and do it well, and it is part of this amazing motion picture called Star Wars.
It's a lot of sight-reading skill.
Wow. Yeah. And so when you go to the movies, do you pay attention to the music, even if you haven't played on that score? Is it more of a part of the movie for you than maybe it is for others, or can you even tell by now?
Well, it is. Ironically, neither my wife or I are big moviegoers, so I don't actually go see very many movies at all. We don't watch much television either. So, but the times that I have, you pick up, you have to go, oh, I remember that. You know, oftentimes when you're doing it on a kind of regular basis, you sort of walk out of the studio and, you know, the music just evaporates.
It's a job.
Yeah. It's a job, and the music evaporates from your brain. And sometimes, you know, you'd go home and you'd be on the phone with somebody and they'd say, oh, what did you work on today? And it's kind of like, and you'd sort of forgotten already, but then you go to the movie and you hear that, and then it sort of all comes back. It's like, I remember that.
Yeah. Kind of like your favorite song from the Wayback Machine, and you hear it again, and you're like, oh, yeah.
And it's like, oh, yeah, I remember that.
I've been singing along to this all my life, but not for decades now. I've heard it. But you did go see Star Wars Force Awakens in the theater. Please tell me you did.
I have to confess, I've not seen it, no.
No.
I haven't gone to see it. Jeez.
Dane, you're in the movie.
I know.
But I bet your name rolls across on the credits.
And wait for it to be cheaper.
Oh. So you guys don't get invited to the opening, the big gala openings and such?
We do get invited to screenings sometimes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, screenings.
I couldn't go to this one.
Well, it was a great movie, and I looked forward to it partly because I really love that musical score of Star Wars movies. Yeah. And so it's quite thrilling to have you here at the KUAC studios on Alaska Live, and knowing that you played under the direction of John Williams for The Force Awakens Star Wars.
Yes.
Well, let's hear another piece that you're going to sample for your recital. Mm.
Well, maybe we should do a movement of Elliot Carter sonata. I think we're going to do the third movement, the Adagio.
Is that in a four-movement piece
or a
three?
It's a four-movement piece.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The first movement is kind of like it was written last. It has material from all the other movements. And that first movement material comes back at the very end of the piece. It's a very, it's circular. Carter is a big believer in transformation of material. So things transformed. He conceived this four movement work as one big, large movement. And the third movement is a beautiful, beautiful slow movement. And, of course, has some of the metric modulation, a rhythmic device he used to further unify the movement of the piece. I read somewhere that the second movement, the cello, Carter actually utilizes for each instrument the qualities of that instrument. So for the piano, which can't really play legato and is much more percussive, and the cello, very, very beautiful, expressive, powerful expressor, he brings that out in this movement. And it actually said the piano cannot compete with the cello's expressiveness, and it actually is true.
Well, you know, the piano is one of those instruments that kind of combines percussion with the strings.
Yes, yes. And as a pianist, what we try to do is try to be all of the
yes.
various instruments, and especially instrument number one, the voice. And next would be strings with the bow for legato. And we actually, it's magic. It's a trick that we play legato. And so we can kind of do that, but it's nothing like an instrument with a bow or the voice, you know. So I thought that was rather amusing.
Yeah. From the composer's standpoint.
Yeah. This piece was written for an American cellist, Bernard Greenhouse. And Greenhouse is sort of really mostly known as a cellist for his just beautiful legato. He had the most singing, beautiful legato tone. And so I think Carter just decided to embrace the differences between the cello and piano as much as he could. Rather than trying to unify them, he would
focus
on the differences between the two.
Elliot Carter wrote this piece with a cellist in mind.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. I mean, and I think Carter was known working closely with his instrumentalists, his performers. Yes.
Do you feel like Elliot Carter mostly wrote while sitting at the piano, though?
I don't think he did, but, you know, especially not one of those, oh, let's just tinker around. No. You know, he definitely had a formal procedure, you know, in mind.
That amazes me that composers just are able to think in those terms, you know, for the piano, for the cello, and not necessarily play them out.
It's amazing. And, you know, when tonality went out the window at the beginning of the 20th century, and, well, there were people still, you know, late romantics composing.
Yes.
But when things were breaking apart and people thought, oh no, you know, this is the end of music as we know it. What happened was, like, people like Webern will use a series, three actual pitches, and they're called pitch sets. And he will use sometimes one or two or three of these pitch sets and they use them and transform them to tie all their tonal things together, so the piece together. So that takes the place of, you know, 1-5-1, mm-hmm. you know, tonal progression. So it's not, you know, it's Carter, what he did is he opens this sonata with a gesture that has six notes. Oh. And those six pitches are transformed and used as the basis of his pitch material. So it's all very, you know, you can, things hang together very, very well. So,
and you're going to play the third movement, the adagio.
Movement. Yes.
You are tuned to KUAC's Alaska Live. My guests, Lorna Etter and Dane Little. Yes, of course.
Thank you.
tell you how much of a thrill it is to have you here performing on Alaska Live with music that you've worked up for a recital. I mean, you've been on Alaska Live many times as the accompanist, and you are a great accompanist, and don't get me wrong there. But you are quite the performer in your own right also. And so this is really cool to have you here and being able to make the music accessible by talking about it and to have the guest cellist here who happens to be your brother, who is a great musician himself. And what did your parents say when you both said you're going into music?
Well, our parents aren't musicians, but they were music lovers. Music lovers, and certainly started us all out on piano and everything. So I stuck with the piano, and when Dane wanted to play in grade school, you know, back then we had orchestra in the grade schools down in the lower 48. And she said, "I have one request. You cannot play the violin."
She didn't want the violin in the house. That did not speak to her.
She would not listen to people practicing on the violin.
Too high pitched.
I don't know what it was.
Something.
She just thought, oh, this is going to be terrible. I hate to say that to all these beautiful violin players out there. But, you know, Dane chose the cello.
Yeah.
Mostly, I have to say, it's the orchestra program started in fifth grade. This was Olympia, Washington. And it was a combination of, we went to a community concerts, if you remember that program, and I heard Leonard Rose play a recital in Olympia, Washington on community concerts, and I thought that was just the coolest thing. And then they had just hired a new instrumental music teacher in the Northeastern School District who was a cello player. And so I chose the cello. There were three of us in fifth grade in the orchestra, and we rehearsed in the ice cream room. We had two cellos and a violin.
And since mom said no to the violin, the cello seemed like a good idea.
It was.
Yeah. I mean, you do have to buy a seat on it on the plane, which the violin could fit at least in the overhead compartment. But hey, you know, you've become very accomplished with the cello, and it was a good choice for you.
I think so.
Yes.
My mother thought so.
Well, and Dane's son, my nephew, also plays cello.
Oh.
And, you know, he's waiting to hear between Boston and New York. He's a early music Baroque cellist.
And Dane, you played with the Green String Quartet also, and I've played some of those recordings on afternoon concert here on the locally produced show at this time on weekdays so many times. And that's really fun music because it's not necessarily all this hardcore classical music, but it's, you know, Welcome to the Jungle, which like some of the kids played last weekend, and so fun.
Yeah, that was really a treat. I played in that group for about 2 years. Richard got really busy with his bluegrass stuff, which was his
Richard
Green. He's just a phenomenal bluegrass player, and his musical life got really busy. And so he just didn't have time for the quartet, but that was really a blast. And it was kind of a fun thing for me because, I also played bass, in high school and college. And did a lot of jazz and Latin music at Washington State University, where I got my undergraduate degree. And so that was kind of fun to get back to doing the jazz thing, but on the cello, which was a different vehicle.
Yeah, but it was part jazz, part like popular music, rock music that he would have you guys recording. And...
Oh, yeah, all kinds of stuff. And he had a lot of different people writing for the group, so
that
it
too.
Was really fun.
Well, you've had a wide and varied career, and part of it is you're here in Fairbanks in recital on the UAF Davis Concert Hall stage tonight, and that gets started at 7 o'clock, and that'll be quite the treat. Do you have that one, what'd you call it, the showpiece or the fun whimsical piece?
Yes, Whimsy.
Speaking of Whimsy. Yes.
Wallingford Rieger, it is called Whimsy.
It is. And this is the finale from Lorna Etter and Dane Little. And you'll hear this on stage tonight if you can make it to the recital at Davis Concert Hall at 7. This is KUAC's Alaska Live. The lower, more like lumbering parts of that reminded me of the character Snuffleupagus from Sesame Street. Fun.
He does this little mechanistic thing, and there are some almost actual quotes of Debussy and some other stuff. It's really fun.
So fun. Well, thank you both for being part of Alaska Live today. Lorna Etter, such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
And Dane Little, welcome to Fairbanks, and thanks for being on the show.
Oh, my pleasure.
And thanks to UAF Music Department, Gary Toth, for delivering and retrieving the piano every time we need it. And this time, too. I'm your host. I'm Lori Neufeld for KUAC's Alaska Live. This is KUAC 89.9 FM and KUAC HD Fairbanks and streaming at KUAC.org. Support for the Alaska Live series of live music and conversation on KUAC is made possible by a grant from Design Alaska. Design Alaska, strengthening the community through support of the arts. It is 7 minutes after the hour of 2 o'clock, and to round out today's afternoon concert, we'll hear some music that has been scored or at least played in movies, and we'll try to fit some Star Wars in there too. But first off, we have from the Red Violin, it's the Chaconne for violin and piano.